Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Fuel your day with Green Fern's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
And a very good evening from Damien O'Mara. You are very welcome to the Friday edition of Game On. Busy hour of sporting chat to come between now and 7 o'clock. It is... I'm kind of nervous. 48 hours out from the cup final. Oh my God. Bows against Pats. We're going to chat about that endlessly. I'm going to bore you to death for the next 56 minutes with chat about the cup final. That, the English Premier League weekend, all to come in soccer. We're going to look ahead to racing in the company of Jane Mangan. And we are going to chat about the situation in South Africa and in particular how it impacts on Munster Rugby and the URC in the company of Michael Corcoran. To come between now and 7 o'clock, you can text us. Our number is 51552. You can tweet us at GameOn2FM. Will get us, and here to keep me company and keep me on the straight and narrow between now and 7, Alan Cawley, how are you?
I'm good, Damien, how are you?
I'm a little bit huskier than usual.
We've noticed.
Yeah, it's from practicing all my songs ahead of Sunday. Okay. You know, I'll give you a few renditions of various Bose chants.
Bose have great chants.
Oh, I'm very nervous.
Are you?
I swear to God, I wasn't as nervous on my wedding day.
Is it nervous excitement or is it nervous trepidation?
I think it's such a big game for Bose. It's such a big game. The last couple of weeks, just when they had the opportunity to like seize the initiative in something, they failed to grab it. Could have won against Sligo, would have been irrelevant. You know, they would have, like, cup final wouldn't have mattered as much as it matters.
Okay, can I flip that round for you?
Oh, please do, Alan.
That's the fan speaking.
Yes.
I'll give you my view on when something has cropped up in front of them and they failed to grasp it. Go back to Europe.
Yeah.
They grasped it.
But can I make
back
it
back to Shamrock Rovers games, head to heads all year, cup second round, was it the men?
Yeah.
They grasped it. The big games, they rise to the occasion, Damien. So
now,
in my view, I think you should be quite calm.
We're gonna get stuck into this later on, right? I'm gonna see your argument and I'm gonna raise it ever so briefly and we'll get stuck into it later. In the grand scheme of things, the pressure was off them in the European games because nobody expected them to do. Now, okay, it got a bit of momentum. So I see that argument and I'll dilute it slightly. And what was the second point you made?
Shamrock Rovers head to heads, how well they've played.
Bows are living in Shamrock Rovers heads rent free. I swear to God, the game I have the least worry about is the derby at the minute.
But my point, that's your kind of fan speaking.
Oh no, I'm very impartial.
Again.
I'm very impartial.
But
very impartial.
I just feel they raised their levels for obviously bigger games. Now you could use that as a stick to beat them with in terms of you should be doing hitting that level all season, no matter who you're playing against, and I think that's obviously the inconsistency that's affected them in terms of not finishing higher up the table. But again, I think there's contributing factors to that. But certainly, I feel when it comes to the big games, Damien, I think it would be very unfair to label them as not delivering.
The big story in League of Ireland football is the game against Waterford, between Waterford and UCD tonight, is massive.
I thought you were going to tell me it's cancelled or something.
Oh, no, it's not, no. Well, not yet. Jesus, come here. League of Ireland, anything can happen. There's a bit of time yet. I want to talk to you about Bray and Capantili because this has really gone underneath the radar for a lot of people. And it is seismic. Will we do this now or will we talk about this later on? Talk about it later on. Okay. Because
I played with Bray, obviously, for 2 years.
I can't believe there's not people on the streets protesting against this.
Really?
And you know what really annoys me? And we'll come back to it later on. The statement which was released today, which I would take issue with in a couple of regards, but one of the things that jumped out at me was consultation between management at both clubs. There's no mention of consultation with fans. There's no mention of consultation with the businesses in Bray and the businesses in Capantili. And these mergers do not work. Pats and St. Francis didn't work. Drumcondra and Home Farm didn't work.
From what I've read of it though, is it not more of a takeover than actually an amalgamation between the two?
But then why tart it up as an amalgamation?
But I think the point the very first thing you said was, why isn't there people on the streets and I can't believe there's not outrage over this? Maybe that tells you why they've needed to come together, Damien.
No, I don't know. I don't know.
Because I played out there, as you say.
And I don't want to be dismissive of Capantili. Capantili have done tremendous work in the last couple of years, but they're playing their games miles away from where they're from. Okay, they've done great grassroots work level, but the League of Ireland team, I don't think, has made the connection with the locality.
No, and that's difficult to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
You could accuse other teams who were there years and years and years have never done that either.
They're playing their home games a couple of hundred yards away from us here, and we're some distance from Capantili in terms of that. But like, Bray is a club with such tradition.
It is.
Bray deserves to be a Premier Division team
on its own.
Has a massive fan base there.
I wouldn't say a massive fan base.
Oh, it's got a very passionate fan base.
Really?
I would say
so,
yeah.
What's their average crowd?
I don't know what their average crowd is.
700? 800?
But come here, they're like so many other clubs. There's been issues behind the scenes. They've lost that local connection.
But why have they lost that local connection? Did
because
they ever have in the first place?
Of the club, there was, Alan. Go back a couple of years ago. I remember covering those games when I didn't drive, and the only match that the man outside the window would roster me to do was Bray because I could get there in the dart.
UCD
because no one else wanted to go there.
I have a major soft spot. As I said, I spent 2 years out there with them, and great times and great people. But I never felt what you're talking about in terms of that connection with the community. And they tried a lot of things, but I always felt they were kind of struggling to just kind of build that connection, make that connection for whatever reason. And now, I understand your argument in terms of the history that they have and they should be a standalone club. But having two clubs out there, Damien, in close proximity, and both of them struggling, does it not make sense to try and kind of come together in some way, shape or form and try and build up that whole area with one team?
I just think it would be a shame for the history of Bray Wanderers in particular.
What, is 60, 79 years?
To disappear into the ether. But come here, I'm just a bit of a romantic at heart, Alan.
Okay, but what's the alternative to keep going at the rate they're going at?
I think the alternative is to try and build the work that they've done again in the last couple of years to strengthen that base within the community. Mm. Because no doubt, you know, like so many clubs, you had an issue around ownership and a disconnect between the fans and the owners, and people that have given their lives to that club felt they weren't welcome at the Carlisle grounds. That's all
which
changed
totally
in the last
wrong,
couple of years.
Niall O'Driscoll went in, obviously, and Niall was with St. Joseph's Boys, and there was a big link there. And I think, to be fair to Niall, he had big plans over the last couple of years. But for whatever reason, they didn't hit the heights in terms of gaining that promotion. And maybe they just feel, Damien, as though it's just too big of a struggle.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll chat about that. We flogged it to bits now. We'll touch on it later on. Before we talk to Fergal, Brennan, about the Premier League weekend, you were in Talla last night for the women, and there is a real sense of a missed opportunity that there was such a target for this in the game on Tuesday to be 6 points from six, put ourselves in the box seat for finishing second in the table behind Sweden. And there was a real sense of underperforming and a couple of things that just didn't seem to feel right last night.
Yeah, I would agree with every word of that, Damien. A massively missed opportunity, especially when you go back to the last window when they obviously beat Finland and did all the hard work over in Helsinki with a brilliant result and played ever so well. Against Sweden on the first match, they put in a decent enough performance, a good performance. Everybody was saying it was a great performance. It wasn't by any means, but it was a good performance to hold Sweden to 1-0. But I wouldn't be taking any too much credit from that. But to be fair to them, in the second game against Finland, they were brilliant and they got the victory. You're coming into these two games, and as you rightly say, the position you've put yourself in, you have to be aiming towards 6 points. And they would have been, to be fair, but they totally underperformed last night. To be fair to Slovakia too, I don't think we should be disrespectful to them. They played very well. And that's about all they deserved, Ireland. They're probably even lucky to get a point in.
But if it was the flip side and it was the men's team and one player on the men's team dragged their teammates to where they dragged them to last night, like Katie McCabe did, if Ireland didn't have Katie McCabe probably playing slightly out of position,
I'd say majorly out of position.
I was trying to be nice.
Yeah, be honest, majorly out of position. And that's, I suppose, the debate that's raging at the moment around the women's game, because we see the level that Katie is reaching every week in the UK, just named Player of the Month as well. We see the development in terms of the game over there. She's surrounded by internationals all over, with Chelsea, Arsenal, whoever the case may be, at the Premier League level in England playing, and she's so good, yet we seem to play her left full or left wing back. I just don't get that, Damien. And when she was higher up the pitch last night, and you're right to say that if anybody ever dragged her team back, she was inspirational in what she did last night, not just with the goal, everything else, everything about her performance, she was brilliant. But the argument rages in terms of where you play her, and for me you would have to be playing your best player either in centre midfield or in that number 10 role and be a bit more creative higher up the pitch where she can do damage. Wasting her at left full or at left wing back, I just don't get it, and I don't understand that, to be honest with you.
Grant, we'll chat plenty of soccer to come. Fergal Brennan is with us, as mentioned. Hiya Fergal, how are you?
Very well, and yourself?
Not too bad, thanks for being with us. I'm looking through the fixtures for the weekend, and I'll be very honest with you, I'm finding it difficult enough to get overly excited about an awful lot of stuff, and I'm wondering, when will Man United get their business done? Because surely of all the fixtures, the one that there's a team that needs a particular pep or a particular bounce is Man United's players ahead of the visit to Chelsea on Sunday.
They need a pep, all right.
I think the Pep at Allen's internet might be a bit too expensive, and I think he's under a nice big contract on the other side of the city. I think in terms of the situation with Manchester United, Michael Carrick was asked about it in his press conference this morning about Ralph Rangnick and exactly where Manchester United are in terms of the progress with that deal. I would expect it to be done by the start of next week, but in fairness to United, in terms of the way that they structured Carrick coming in on this caretaker to then feed into an interim boss to then eventually appoint a permanent boss in the summer, this is still following that timetable. He said from the start it'd probably be 2 to 3 games. That now looks to be the case in terms of him staying in charge. And I think, yes, obviously you're looking at this game going away from home to the Premier League leaders as it stands, and Chelsea have been really, really good so far this season and obviously ticked themselves into the last 16 in the Champions League in midweek. But Michael Carrick has been working with the players this week. When you are building towards a game like this, those small margins, making sure that you're ready for it, making sure that you've done all the work on the training ground in the days building up to it, can sometimes be more important. And someone like Rangnick, who's essentially built his entire reputation on being a planner, being organised, being very careful about all these small details, he'll probably respect that. He probably wouldn't have wanted to come in and step on what Carrick has been doing because he wants a bit of a fresh page. In terms of the result, I'm not going to say it's a free hit because it's Manchester United against Chelsea. It's always going to be an interesting game that's going to have a lot of attention on it. But Michael Carrick has done a steady job. He's done exactly what he's asked to do. Nothing major in terms of progress. They've got themselves into the knockout rounds of the Champions League. I expect Rangnick to be signed off by the start of next week and then Manchester United move on. But I do think in terms of Chelsea this weekend, the window is too small to get the deal speeded up to get Rangnick in. It's better to look at it from the perspective of just let Carrick make sure that, you know, everything's ticking over this week and approach the game with what he wants to do.
But Alan, you can look at it in one way and say that they were somewhat uninspiring against Villarreal midweek, and then you can say, well, actually, he probably had very limited time with the chaos that was going on behind the scenes. So would you expect to see a slightly more improved or a slightly different Man United? Or do we need to address the fact that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was the figurehead, he was the puppet master, and the puppets are all the same people that are preparing this team for this weekend?
That would be my take on it, Damien, because for anybody who thinks that Michael Carrick is going to come in now and start making wholesale changes in terms of not just personnel but the way they're going to play as well, and a style and a formation or an identity that people have been crying out for, that's just not going to happen, because as you say, they've been part of Solskjaer's backroom team. So if he did have different ideas on how they should play, why didn't he pipe up when Solskjaer was there? And that obviously wasn't the case, and he was very much in the background, Michael Carrick. He came in during the week, as you say, and probably did an okay job. I watched the match against Villarreal. They were okay. I wouldn't say they were by any means very, very good on the night. They got a good result, but the performance was more of what we've been watching, obviously, over the last few weeks with Solskjaer. De Gea saved them, actually, before they got a goal as well, with a brilliant save. So I think we'll see more of the same, Damien. But the problem is they're playing Chelsea, and for me, Chelsea are probably the form team in the league at the moment.
Yeah.
They're absolutely outstanding, and I'd be shocked if they get a result against Chelsea.
Fergal, staying on Sunday, at that Chelsea United 4:30 on Sunday, the one of the 2 o'clock kickoffs, Man City at home to West Ham, which you could probably make a fair argument that it's the big game of the weekend. When you look at City, obviously second in the table, West Ham, who've been resurgent again this year, and this is going to be one of those markers in the water to see exactly where West Ham are at.
It is, and obviously they've got a little bit of an edge on them because they put them out of the Carabao Cup earlier this season. That was the first question in Pep Guardiola's press conference this morning, and he was quite realistic about it, saying that it's essentially a completely different team that they put out, that they'll expect to put out this weekend in the Premier League. And I think, yeah, in terms of a marker of whether West Ham are genuinely serious of making that step from Europa to Champions League, this will be a bit of a point of assessment for them. But I'd still kind of go with caution. There's a huge amount of the season still to go, and we're still in a very early stage in terms of assessing where West Ham are. But I don't think West Ham, in terms of David Moyes, will change a huge amount, even though they're going away from home. They tend to stick with pretty much a consistent at least 10, if not 11, from their starting team every week. I imagine that will be pretty much the same again. Manchester City obviously getting a massive result in midweek against PSG. They look to just be clicking into gear and rolling on and rolling on. But I do go back to the Crystal Palace game from a few weeks back, where just out of nowhere they weren't quite at it. They were a bit slow and a bit sluggish, and Crystal Palace caught them on the hop. I don't think West Ham will be as enterprising and press them as much, but it shows that if City are not completely on form, and maybe, you know, a little bit of a hangover from the midweek in terms of what that took out of them performing against PSG, West Ham could have an opportunity. It's a big, big, big if. But David Moyes has you know, proved a lot of people wrong this season that he is a very capable manager, and this will be a really interesting game.
Yeah, and we're at a stage where we're going to start talking about that gap between them in fourth and the team further down the table in terms of Champions League qualification and everything else. For some reason, it's as if all the games of note or the teams of significance are in action on Sunday. Spurs away to Burnley. Spurs, for a disastrous result for them in Europe last night, but were you surprised at how open Conte was afterwards with regard to how bad he's found the situation at Spurs, or just exactly where they are at? I don't know, was he trying to send a message to the fans, a message to the owners, or in his post-match press conference was there almost some kind of a road to Damascus moment where he realised the exact extent of the situation he's found himself in?
Possibly. I mean, Antonio Conte is known for being a very, very, very straight character in terms of how he speaks to the media, how he addresses his players and that kind of thing. And I think, yeah, the situation is probably worse than he anticipated, because from the outside looking in, you look at the players that are there, you look at the names that you're able to put on your team sheet, whether it's Premier League game or Europa Conference League game, you've got some massive players, recognised Premier League international stars. And consistently, from the big names, the likes of Kane and Son Heung-min, right the way down, they're all underperforming, and that was shown in up in lights last night against Mora away from home in European action. And I think, yeah, it's a little bit of everything from Conte's perspective, because he's able to look at this and say, I've just come in, these problems that are existing are as a result of the previous management, the ownership, the players, whatever it is, whatever the issue that is existing here has nothing to do with me. I've only been here for 2 weeks. I'll do everything I can to turn this round. But if those fundamentals are not fixed soon, then I won't hang around. And this is the entire thing with Antonio Conte. I do like him. I think he's an excellent manager. But he does have a very short lifespan at clubs. He tends to come in, if he's able to turn them around and get them to win a trophy, he will. But even then, if he does, he does tend to walk away. And he doesn't hang around if he doesn't get what he wants in terms of money and in terms of changes. And neither of those look to be moving at Tottenham at the moment.
I agree with a lot of that, Damien, because there's two things at play here. There's a bit of Conte looking after himself, which you can understand, because for people that obviously thought Conte was coming in with a huge reputation and he was going to wave a magic wand and all of a sudden all Spurs problems are fixed, that's obviously not the case, but he's noticed that in the last 2 or 3 weeks as well. And I mentioned, I was on here a couple of weeks back, Damien, after being overwatching him, and I would never label at a player, it's the worst insult you could ever label at a player, that they're not trying. But what I watched the day they played Man United was nothing short of an absolute disgrace from the players, not only on the pitch, but off the pitch as well, in terms of fellas warming up or substitutes. Even afterwards, I hung around and watching players who were out doing running afterwards, what you'd always see with substitutes that didn't play in their game. So the whole thing for me was toxic the day
but
I saw it.
That was after Conte had come in, wasn't it?
Nuno's, it was his last game. He got the sack on the Monday.
So he's
inherited a serious, serious mess. I would actually say not only a mess in terms of where the club is at, but a toxic dressing room, because you look at the players there, and as I say, it's the worst insult you could label the players, but they were a disgrace from what I watched that day.
I want to talk to you about Leeds, your beloved Leeds. Like last year, playing in an empty stadium, they set the world on fire. And then we all expected they'd get back to a piping hot Elland Road and, you know, they'd be... Well, I wasn't going to say they'd be Champions League contenders, but that they'd go well. 17th in the table, 2 points above the relegation zone, and Bielsa has to be a man who's under increasing pressure.
Yeah, and he's a huge job on his hands. And I would have been with you, Damien, in the sense that when the crowd came back, it can be very hostile, Elland Road as well, brilliant atmosphere. I thought that would only enhance them in terms of how well they played last year. There's a little bit of second season syndrome with them. Last year, there was very much a surprise element to the way they played, and Bielsa being new, as you say, no crowds, but very much in the formation that it was almost man for man, Bielsa ball, as he likes to call it. This year, I think a lot of teams have obviously, they've watched them last year, they've played against them. There's a far better understanding in how to probably go against them in terms of stopping that. And I think they're in major trouble in terms of the whole season of relegation. I think they'll have a fight on their hands for the rest of the season coming.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there. Fergal, thanks for being with us as always. Fergal Brennan with us there. Alan's going to stay with us. We're going to switch attention from football to rugby, and our rugby commentator Michael Corcoran joins us. Michael, how are you?
I'm very well, Damien. How are you?
Not too bad. Big news today, obviously, in South Africa. It's had a significant impact on the URC and on Munster. Munster, obviously, due to play back-to-back games in South Africa over the next 2 weekends. What's the latest that we know of in terms of what will be quite an urgent operation to get everyone involved back home?
Yeah, we know that Munster, Scarlets, Zebra and Cardiff are the four teams that are down there supposedly for the next 2 weekends for the play matches against the Bulls, the Sharks, the Stormers and the Lions. So those games have been postponed because of the latest outbreak of COVID in South Africa. Not alone do you have the teams, but you also have teams of officials, Ben Whitehouse, Andy Brace and Andrea Piardi, the referees as well. So those matches postponed, and you know, given the fact that South Africa is on the UK red list with effect from 4 o'clock on Sunday morning, it is a mad scramble to get everybody back. Now, like, this is not just like trying to rearrange a holiday flight because the young fella has the flu or something. I mean, you're talking about a party of between 45 and 50 per team. So that's a pretty big operation from a logistical point of view. It might be easier to get the officials back, but to actually get big chunks of rugby squads back in terms of players, that's a, you know, in the reach of 200 people or whatever. I mean, you're in a scenario like where yesterday British Airways cancelled all their operations from South Africa back to London. So that rules out one route for getting back. So it's all, as I call it, the via route. The via route could be Frankfurt, it could be Dubai, it could be Turkey. But it's not like going out and hiring a car. I mean, planes are kind of difficult enough things to get at the best of times. And then you've got the whole scenario of trying to coordinate the travel, if that's possible, amongst all of the teams. I mean, South Africa is a frighteningly big country in terms of logistics and the geography of it. People are scattered in different places because, you know, while I rattle off the names of four different teams, they're in four different parts of the country. And just trying to coordinate everything logistically is proving to be a big problem, but they're right up against it to get everybody back.
Yeah, and let's be honest, there are things that are more important in life than sport, and the safety and the health of everyone involved is the number one priority for a lot of people, but this does create another fresh headache now for the URC organisers.
It does, but it gives them, like, there is a bit of wriggle room built into the season already, because when you know, the fixtures were put together and thought out before the start of this season, you know, there were no matches being played during the course of the international windows in the Northern Hemisphere. So, for example, we didn't have any United Rugby Championship matches over the last couple of weeks. And there are no matches bracketed at the moment for during the course of the Six Nations Championship. So they do have those weekends to play around with in terms of planning. And my understanding is that the matches which are postponed are most likely going to slot into those places there. You know, I mean, they had come up with an idea initially that the South African teams would base themselves in Italy. But that was going back, you know, 4, 5, 6 weeks ago. But then the South African government lifted the restrictions further, so it meant that everybody could travel there and play matches there. So it's just it's an evolving situation. You know, I mean, the good thing about it is that there is room in the calendar for to play these matches. In terms of preparation for Europe, it's far from ideal for any of the teams. You know, they won't have played a match. You know, for example, look at Munster's situation there. They're playing Wasps in the opening round of the Champions Cup in a couple of weeks' time. If they don't slot in a game next weekend, it could be, I think it's up to 7 weeks before, you know, since they've actually played a competitive game of rugby.
Yeah, and I suppose that there were two sides to the argument in advance. Was that, one, it was unfair that Munster, without their international contingent, had to go to South Africa, and that was going to be their build-up to Europe. Now they're in a situation where, you know, you've mentioned there, the internationals will be probably in a better position than some of the others to come back, but it's a major headache for Johan van Graan and for everyone involved to try and get some form of competition into the legs in advance of Europe, because there's such a small margin for error.
Yeah, and I mean, you're in a situation. I saw Craig Casey sent out a tweet earlier where I know that he was one of the players who actually just arrived in South Africa today, and he's literally, you know, going around the revolving door in the airport and hopefully back onto a plane for to get back out of the place. And you know, the other Irish international players who had been given the weekend or given the week off were due to arrive at some stage tomorrow, with a view to them hitting the ground running from a training point of view next week, so they could have a week's prep and a game next weekend against the Lions before they came back and played Wasps in the Champions Cup. So that is a bit of a problem, actually.
Yeah. Just very briefly, just to finish, obviously Connacht in action against the Ospreys tonight. You'll be on duty for Leinster against Ulster on Radio 1 Extra tomorrow evening at 8 o'clock. And it is, I think, a lot of people surprised that the likes of Tadhg Furlong are featuring for Leinster tomorrow. But it is a bit of a challenge for the head coaches to get combinations back in place and reintegrate players in advance of those European games coming quick down the tracks.
Yeah, well, you see, you have a situation where, I mean, if you were to say logistically, or you were to say, you know, the player who could play ahead of Tadhg Furlong would be Michael Alatoa, but he's playing for Samoa in that game against the Barbarians in Twickenham over the course of the weekend on Saturday. So, you know, Tadhg's minutes will be managed further down the track, you know, over the course of the Christmas period. But it's good to see the likes of Robbie Henshaw getting a gallop as well in the middle of the pitch with Kieran Frawley. And there are other people, you know, like Jordan Larmour, who hasn't featured an awful lot, really. And it's good to see Dan Levy there as well too. So, you know, there's always a bit of mixing and matching. It's a bit of a challenge this time of the year, again, given the fact that there were no United Rugby Championship matches during the course of the international window. So it's a difficult time for everybody. But, I mean, if you look at it from a Leinster point of view, from an Ulster point of view, from a Connacht point of view, they're doing it with their squad based here. They don't have the added headache, if I can call it that, of the logistics of trying to get a team back from the other side of the world to get them back to Ireland.
Michael, thanks as always. Michael Corcoran, a rugby commentator there. Alan, 26th of November 2021, Toy Show Night, and we're still talking about COVID-19 causing chaos.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, anyway, good luck to the Munster lads. I was in touch with one or two of them earlier, and it's just like...
They can't believe it.
What can you do? But come here. They have to come home.
I started watching the Formula One, the Netflix documentary.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But season 3 I'm up to, and I watched the first episode, and it was funny. It's ironic you talking about that now with Munster, but the first episode of season 3 was when COVID kicked in and the first Grand Prix was cancelled.
They get season 4 and season 5 out of it yet. Break to take. We're chatting racing with Jane Mangan next.
Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on. Racing. And you are very welcome back to the programme. We are going to move on, and as the jingle just said, chat about racing. Jane Mangan is with us as always. Jane, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good to have you with us as always. Ahead of what is a very, very big weekend of some top-quality jump racing.
Yeah, look, I know it's cold and it's a little bit miserable outside, but that means the ground is getting a little bit softer for these jump horses to gallop on and jump over. So I suppose last weekend, from an Irish perspective, we had a real star of the show in Aplutar in the Betfair Chase. He was exceptional. And hopefully this weekend, Damien, we might be up for something similar.
And we are in that situation where everything now is either a marker for Christmas or a marker for Cheltenham. So just say, for example, before we talk about this weekend, you mentioned Aplutard last weekend. The big discussion there is, can that momentum be kept up and can that form line continue to improve?
Yeah, that's it. And I suppose, can we continue to prove that we have the best horses at this side of the Irish Sea? And aside from the spring festivals and the Christmas festivals, there are grade ones to be won. The Betfair Chase last weekend is a very illustrious race, and for Aplutar to win it as easily as he did set a marker for the rest to follow. This weekend, the Ladbroke Trophy, previously known as the Betfair Chase, this has been won by some subsequent Gold Cup winners. Bobsworth won this, Denman won it twice. This is a super race, and this weekend's renewal, we have 4 Irish representatives in it. Interestingly enough, we have some young guns. Éclat de Rire leads the betting for Henry de Bromhead and Rachel Blackmore, the pair who teamed up with Aplutar last week, again saddled the favourite for the Ladbroke Trophy. And Rillo, second favourite, Paul Nichols. But on the ropes, the recent Munster National winner for Willie Mullins, a huge opportunity for Sean O'Keefe on the ropes. He is a fancy for many people. Fiddler on the Roof for Colin Tizzard, and Willie also has the Rich Ritchie pair, Animix and Brahma Bull, in there for Jack Foley and Brian Hayes. But Éclat de Rire was, I suppose, was a little bit early to tell at Cheltenham when he came down, but he was very good on his seasonal bow at Wexford, and he's quite unexposed. He could still be well handicapped off a mark of 154.
Just, you mentioned there the interesting aspect of the ages of the horses that are in contention this weekend. Is this a trend towards putting younger horses in a race like this, or is it just simply a case of you roll the dice and you see what horses are available?
Not really. I suppose you want a horse that's still improving, and like people, there is an optimum age for a horse to peak at, and that's around 8 or 9 years of age. So when you take Eclat de Rear, he's a 7 rising 8 year old. We're nearly at January, so they're nearly that year older. But he's of the age where he still could be improving, and theoretically, if he's running off a mark of 154 tomorrow, who's to say that he couldn't be a potentially 160 rated horse in the future? It's all about potential with young horses, whereas the older horses, we see a little bit more of them, we have a little bit more evidence to go on homework wise, and we kind of feel like the handicapper has a grasp of them. But that's a handicap. This weekend at Fairy House is more like grade ones where they're running weight for age. We know some of the established stars here.
Okay. You mentioned Fairy House, obviously, live on RT television on Sunday afternoon. 3 grade ones up for decision, but I think all focus, it's fair to say, is really going to be on Honeysuckle and the Hatton's Grace Hurdle.
Yeah, for sure. Look, we're on air on RT2 at 12:50, and it's really about seeing Honeysuckle back. She won the Champion Hurdle last year. She began her season like she did the season before in the Hatton's Grace. So she's going for a hat-trick of wins in the race. She's going to try and emulate the great Solarina of yesteryear. And she's been flawless in her career. What can you say about her? She is the equine queen. She's unbeaten 12 from 12. She won a point-to-point as well to boot. She has, I suppose, what makes her a brilliant mare is that twice she has visibly seemed less than her best and she still won. I think that was fair to say of her last performance at the Punchestown Festival, when she maybe looked like she had enough for the season. And in this race last year, she was undercooked. She was almost underprepared for the race and she almost got beaten by Ronald Pump. But connections seem like they're happier with her now. They seem like she's a little bit more forward in her training. And while she has Saldier, Sire du Burlet, Stormy Ireland, Abracadabras is a very classy horse, she's all of them to beat. She is a phenomenon. And what she did last year at Cheltenham was exceptional. She's been an ATM for a lot of Irish punters. And I don't think they're going to abandon her this weekend.
Do you fancy her yourself to do it?
I think you couldn't pick a hole in her armour. She's so solid. And I think if connections are happy with her, she's still a relatively young mare as well. You can't fault her. And I think on her best form, she holds all these comfortably. And again, who's to say that she won't be better this year? But we're looking forward to seeing her out and see what kind of evidence we get.
And away from that, we mentioned 3 grade ones in all. If Honeysuckle is the main act, how strong are the support acts?
It's the action at Fairy House. If you're at Nutting on Sunday, I know it's cold, but wrap up. The racing is exceptional. The Royal Bond, you have My Mozzie 3-stripe, live 4th in Cheltenham Bumper last year. My Mate Mozzie, 10-length winner of the Fur Auction at Navan. Impervious, unbeaten mare for Colin Murphy in Utrecht. This is a very good race, the Royal Bond. And the Drinmore, there's 10 runners. It's quite a deep Drinmore. Maybe it doesn't have a star attraction like an Envoy Alain, but you have Gabby Nacko, you have Lifetime Ambition, who was brilliant at Down Royal, Midnight Run, Fire Attack, Cape Gentleman and Blueberry. There is some really exceptional races at Fairy House. The Porterstown is always a great race as well. And if Honeysuckle spends her year in Leopardstown and Cheltenham and all that, that's great. But you want to see her out, you want to see her make her seasonal debut, and you want to see all of her connections, then the Fairy House this weekend is the place to be.
Okay, Jane, safe travels up the road to Fairy House. Thanks so much for being with us as always.
Thank you.
Green Fern, have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Fern's high protein cooked chicken breast fillet, available in selected stores nationwide.
And you're very welcome back. We are going to look ahead to the big event of the weekend. I know you like a tune.
Love a tune.
Oh no, hang on, that's not what I wanted.
Sisters and brothers,
I was going to play, I played the wrong one.
Come on, Damien.
This is for our Pat supporting producer. This is the one I meant to play. Oh, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. Come here and I ask you a serious question. This is the real Dublin Derby, isn't it? You look at it, people talk about the bite between Rovers and Bows. Mm. But you look at this, you've got two clubs, Northside, Southside, absolutely rooted in their communities, massive legacy within the league. It's a completely different derby, and in a purist's way, it's a real pure Dublin derby.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Damien, and for the reasons you outlined, it is for the pure.
But I love
the Bowes Rovers fixtures. There's absolutely nothing like them over the last 3 or 4 years. They've been incredible. But in terms of a Dublin derby on Sunday, and what's really rare about this, and very unusual actually when I heard it and when I read the stat, it's the first time they've met in a cup final.
It's bizarre, isn't it?
Unbelievable.
Expected, actually, Graham Gartland's with us as well, who knows a thing or two about winning cups. Graham, how are you?
I'm not bad. How are you, Damien?
Good. Good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us. Graham, just, it's great with the week that's in it. The ticket sales are through the roof. There's talk that it's going to break records for a cup final in the modern era. I think 41,000 is the overall biggest crowd ever. It's online to break that. How open a cup final do you expect it to be?
Yeah, I think it will be. I think both teams will go at it. I think they've similar records in the league in terms of goals scored and goals against. Pats have conceded 42, Bows have conceded 46. They've both scored just around the 60 mark as well. So it makes for an intriguing final. The front lines are good and their defences are probably a little bit weak. So it makes for an open game.
But Graham, all the pressure's on Bows, realistically, isn't it? And that's not me talking Bows down. You know, it's a crucial game for them to get back into Europe. And there has been this sense in recent weeks that they've perhaps stumbled a little bit towards the tail end of the season.
Yeah, their form probably hasn't been great. In fairness, their form has been better than Pat's going into in November. Bows have they've beaten Drogheda, they've beaten Rovers. Pats haven't had a win in the whole of November. They drew 2-2 with Bows, they've lost to Sligo, drew a Finn Harps and drew a Waterford. So if you're talking about a team stumbling, the form guide would say Bows are in better form than St. Pat's would be, but obviously missing out in Europe is a big thing for them. So the pressure then goes on to them for this game, where Pats have finished second in the league. They have European football secure, so for them it's all about winning the cup and nothing else.
Yeah, because the flip side of that argument, Alan, is that Pats had their work done a couple of weeks ago, and it's inevitable, irrespective of what team you are, there's always that little bit of a fall off when you've secured second place, you've secured European football.
Yeah, obviously the fact that they had secured that, Damien, there probably was a little bit of eyes focusing on the cup final and fellas looking after themselves. I actually covered the game against Sligo Rovers when they got heavily beaten 3-0, and it probably flatters Sligo Rovers the scoreline because Pats played really, really well on the night. So going into this, I don't think Stephen O'Donnell will be too concerned about, I suppose, those last 4 or 5 games. I would agree with Graham in the sense that it'll be quite open. Both teams will fancy their chances, even though one has finished second and one has finished fifth. I don't think there's much between these teams at all, Damien. There's plenty of goals in the team. What I'm finding it very hard to separate these teams, to be honest with you. It's probably the most even final I can remember in a long, long time in terms of it being literally a flip of a coin. And the only thing that's shading it towards Bows, in my view, is to have a top marksman in Georgie Kelly, the top scorer, as we know. I think he scored 26 goals in all competitions. Now, that's not to say Pats can score goals, but I think the goals are more spread round with their top scorer, Matty Smith, is 11. But the other thing is the fact that Bows had that brilliant run in Europe, and playing in the Aviva, that environment, those surroundings, that might give them a slight little edge as well, because they'll be relishing the opportunity to get back there where they have such fond memories of those games in the summer.
Yeah, and like, how big a factor can that be? Because they've obviously got the experience of there, even just minor things. They know the bus route in, they know the dressing rooms, they know the size of the pitch, but like, it's going to be a completely different beast. Like, there was, 8,000? I was at one of the matches with my young one, and like, 8,000 people making a bit of noise compared to 41,000 this weekend making a bit of noise.
Yeah, but I think the large amount of those people as well, out of the 41, it'll be heavily Bows populated, and there's going to be a huge contingent from Bows. Pats obviously won't like me saying that, but that's the reality of it, Damien. And I think they'll relish the challenge. The one thing I mentioned to you at the top of the show, with Bohemians, obviously they've been very inconsistent in the league, but when it comes to the big games, they seem to raise their game. I pointed out the fact the European games, all the games against Shamrock Rovers, they raised their levels as well, and they played really, really well, and probably had the better in a lot of those games, and obviously they beat them in the cup run as well. So I actually think, as I said, it's very, very hard to separate them, but that's why I would slightly give the edge to Bows.
Graham, just on Keith Long, obviously sent off along with Stephen Bradley in the derby at Dalymount a couple of weeks ago. The end result is that Keith has no communication with the squad from an hour before the game and an hour after the game. So Trevor Crawley, Derek Pender will take charge of things from the sideline. Is that a completely unnecessary sideshow, or how can that impact on the game itself?
It can impact on it, because it breaks the norm, really. You know, you want things to be as sort of familiar as possible going into a big game. And when something goes out, we're the creatures of habit footballers, and we like things done the same way going into every game. Have the same breakfast, have the same lunches, you know, follow a certain routine. And when the manager's not there, they might throw out the routine, which can affect some players. So it might have a little bit of a factor. About a month ago, I was on one of the podcasts on RTE on Monday, and I tipped Bowes. I thought, for the reasons that Alan had said, that I thought he had the best striker in the league, and I thought that he'd be the final factor in the game, and I still think he'll have an impact in it. But I'd be worried about Bowes from the sense that in the last month, things have changed because a lot of the dynamics of the squad has changed. A lot of players have come out and said they're leaving. A lot of players are moving on. I think probably five or six of the squad are going to be moving on. So for them, it's the last game for the club. So either it's going to go one way or the other. Either they're going to go out in a high, or they're going to go out where they've one eye on something else. And that's where I tip. Maybe I think it'll be closer than people think. I think it'll be a really... I'm unsure. I'm actually starting leaning towards Pats when I look at all that experience in the squad, and they've a lot of ex Dundalk players in the squad as well, who have been to a lot of finals over the last few years. Alan Matthews is who we both worked with. Yeah. has a habit of pulling a rabbit out of a hat going into a final. We played Pats in 03. Pats were heavily favourites. We beat them again in Waterford in 04. Alan again has a good way of galvanising the squad to go into a big game, and you know, I just have a habit of going against Alan that I just maybe want to go for Pats now.
Yeah, Graeme, you really endeared yourself to me a couple of minutes ago, but like, you know, we're going to fall out here before the end of this
broadcast. He's flip-flopping,
he's sitting on the fence.
I'm not actually, a month ago I said, but Georgie Kelly looks like he's going to go, Tierney's gone, Cornwell looking like he's going to Australia, Buckley going to Australia, the left back looking like he's leaving. A lot of these players are moving on, you know, so they're not exactly coming in the tightest squad that you'd have going into a final, and that might add to it. Nothing's come out about Pat's players. You haven't heard Pat's players looking to leave or looking to move on.
I think, Graeme, to be fair to Stevie deserves a lot of credit for the season that
Stevie O'Donnell.
Absolutely, he's done a brilliant job to finish second in the league, because this was the first year that he was able to put his stamp on it. So it's his group, it's his players.
And it's a small squad.
Yeah, and I think that's what Stevie wanted, because you go back to obviously his time at Dundalk as well. Stephen Kenny, he always worked off a small squad because he's far more interested in quality over quantity. Now that can... you can become unstuck with that as well if you were to run into injuries and different things like that. But I think that's obviously the model that Stevie wants to go work off as well. He also, to be fair to him, Damien, to get to the final, it would be massive for Stevie to win an FAI Cup as well in his first final with St. Pat's. It would be huge. He deserves so much credit. So even though we're obviously outlining the things with Bowes, I think Stevie deserves huge credit. And they have a very good team as well, St. Pat's. You look at the midfield area, Forrester, Alfie Lewis, Jamie Lennon, Robbie Benson, it's actually going to be really interesting in terms of how Stevie lines up, because I think he's really unsure about Ronan Coughlin in the last few weeks. In the second half of the season, he won't start. I think Matty Smith is far better through the middle, and he's obviously scored 11 goals, but he's a really, really dangerous, hounds defenders, doesn't give them a second. Obviously Dara Burns will play on the right, and then it's a question of who you play on the left. So he could even go with maybe Matty Smith on the left and play Robbie Benson as a false nine, just to get Forrester in the middle, because he has to play Forrester as well.
But it's like, you look at it, it's Stephen O'Donnell, Graeme, who has the far, you know, you'd imagine he's going to have less sleepless nights between now and Sunday, because it is that far more settled squad in recent weeks.
Yeah, there has been. I watched them play a false nine against Shamrock Rovers at home or in Tallaght Stadium, and it didn't work. Benson just couldn't get into the game. Burns off the right was actually really good, and King has scored a lot of goals in the run up to the cup. I know he scored in the semi-final against Dundalk as well, so he has got the options in terms of his front three, of them moving around and interchanging a little bit more. I agree Forrester has to play. I think he controls the game for St. Pat's in the midfield sense. He'll up the tempo when he needs, then he'll slow it down when he needs, then he'll try and play the game at his pace. So again, in the last month I've just gone towards Pat's. I went with Bowes a couple of months ago because I thought Georgie Kelly would be the difference. He only came back in last week. I know he scores down in Sligo to draw the game. I think their ace in the hole might be the lad Promise that's come in for Bowes in the last month as well. He's caused all sorts of trouble up front.
This is the question I was going to ask you, Alan, is like Georgie Kelly came on, you know, he had a cameo, no, albeit a very notable cameo, played 13 minutes against Sligo, scored with his first touch of the game, had been out. Like, the talk around Daly Mint was he wasn't going to make the cup final with a torn calf. So do you start Georgie Kelly and risk him, or do you start Promise?
100% you start Georgie Kelly, especially the fact that he came on last week, 13 minutes. Had he not come on last week and there was still the question marks leading up to it, then fair enough, I think that's a valid question. But the fact that he came on, he would have been training as well prior to that game in Sligo, Damien. This week he would have been training. That's 2 weeks under his belt. I know it's a different scenario, obviously, going into a game, but if he's fit and he's looking like he's fit and played last week for 30 minutes, you couldn't leave him out.
Okay, before we finish on this and talk about Waterford against UCD, you have a serious issue with Keith Long being banned for this game.
Yeah, well, not just with Keith. I think no matter who the individual was, it was Stephen Bradley last year, and it's wrong. It shouldn't happen. The same way as I think the rule that was brought in terms of players missing out in finals as well. Unless it's a really bad, nasty challenge where somebody does something really bad and he misses a final. And the same way with a manager. I was at the game.
Yeah, just for people who might not be familiar, Danny Mandrew scores for Rovers against Bowes, celebrates in front of the Bowes fans with whom he has a fairly testy relationship since leaving the club last year. Keith Long and Stephen Bradley get into it. It's a bit of a dust-up, handbags on the sideline.
Yeah.
Both managers are sent off. Keith Long misses the next game, which is this one.
There was very little in it, Damien, and I was over on the side of the pitch where it happened, obviously behind the managers. As you say, Mandrew scores, so there's celebrations. And you have to remember the context of the fixture as well, in terms of both teams obviously have a serious dislike for each other. I think the referee needs to bring that into consideration. But of course, Stephen Bradley and Keith Long, feisty managers, care for the team, want to see the team do well, and there's words exchanged. They get a bit closer, and they were, to be fair now, they were head-to-head. There's no point in me saying they weren't head-to-head. But that's all it was, Damien. And I think if the referee should have come in and basically said, look, lads, wise up, sort it out, whatever the case may be, and let's get on with the match.
But for Keith Long to miss
out on the final, and Stephen last year, I think that's totally wrong, Damien.
Yeah. Graham?
Did you see Klopp and Arteta had a row? They both got yellow cards. I don't know why the refs in Ireland are so quick to give out red cards. You've been told you can give yellows to coaches now. Just give them both the yellow and say, listen, less of that. You know, clap yourselves on.
Yeah,
like you saw the one with Klopp and Arteta last week is a prime example. The two of them are going head to head. Two of them went at each other. Ref went over, yellow card each.
So
there you go.
Before we talk about Waterford UCD, Graham, you're just about siding with Pats, but we'll be here for extra time and penalties. Alan?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Bowes. I've kind of stuck with them.
There's a shock, Al.
I've stuck with them all year. And I'd love to see. Obviously, you mentioned about the pressure being on them. I think there's pressure on them, Damien, in the other sense that Keith Long has got a lot of plaudits. I've given him a lot of plaudits the last 5 or 6 years. But yet to win silverware, I think there's huge pressure on the fact that this is an unbelievable opportunity to do that. And we spoke at the top of the show about grasping that opportunity. I think they need to do that. So I'm going to go with Bowes.
Stay with us, gentlemen. Let's go to Richmond Park. It's UCD and Waterford in action tonight, a massive game, the relegation promotion playoff. Let's get a sense of what awaits. Good evening to Pat Costello.
Yes, indeed, Damien. Cold, wet and blustery here on the banks of the Cammock, but hopefully we'll have a game that will match the drama that we had all during the week. It all started last Friday night when Waterford played out a scoreless draw against St Pat's, and that condemned them to ninth place in the Premier Division and obviously the relegation spot. Meanwhile, UCD were beating Bray Wanderers 2-0 in Dalymount Park to enter the promotion playoff spot. Then we had the situation on Tuesday when Mark Bertram was tweeting that he had been suspended. Then he was, his contract was terminated. And for tonight's game then, it's assistant manager David Bell who will step up, and he will be assisted by Ian Hendon, who is a former Spurs player and latterly was the manager of Europa Point in Gibraltar. We've just had the team news in. There are five changes on the Waterford team from that scoreless draw. Into the team comes Dara Power, also Anthony Wordsworth, John Martin, Jack Stafford and Greg Halford. They were all missing last week either because of injury or because of suspension. UCD are unchanged from last week's game, and they have been consistent in the last number of weeks. They're unbeaten in six games, and because of that, and maybe because of the activities down in Waterford, they might be slight favourites when we have our kickoff here at 7:45.
Thank you very much to Pat Costello. Graham, just very briefly on this. This traditionally is stacked in favour of the Premier Division team because the First Division team has so many hoops to jump through. But the events of the week, are UCD the favourites ahead of tonight?
I still don't think they are. I think Waterford have been on an okay run in the last couple of months as well. They're a little bit more battle hardened. I think Woodsworth and Halford coming in are going to bring back that experience. I think Waterford could actually bully UCD a little bit as well. But I don't know what's going on that allows them they can do this madness before the biggest game of the season from Waterford. So it's going to be a little bit unsettling, but I think Waterford would have too much experience for UCD this evening.
Alan?
UCD. The best game I watched this year was Waterford UCD in the Cup. It was absolutely fantastic. If there's a repeat of that tonight, the fans are in for a hell of a show, but I'd love to see Andy Myler do it.
Okay, Graham, thanks for being with us.
Thanks
Graham
a lot,
Gartland
lads.
There. Great to talk to you. Alan, thank you very much for your
pleasure.
Company as always. I'm a Bows fan. The man outside the window who has been a great colleague of mine for many years, John Farrell, is a Pats man.
Yes.
Whatever happens, I'll text him to taunt him on Sunday evening. thank you very much to Laura Lee Davies, who was our broadcast coordinator tonight. The chart show's on the way. I think it's with Blonnet. She normally pops her head around the corner, but she didn't tonight, so I'm presuming.
Who would Blonnet go for in the Cup on Sunday?
Blonnet's a sensible woman. She'd go for Bows. Blonnet, I think, lives up around Daily Mail.
I think I would go for Bows,
yes,
guys.
Blonnet,
absolutely.
Go on, Blonnet. Love it.
Dublin 7, massive.
Dublin 7, that's it.
Very good.
Blonnet
very
is on the way with the chart show. From all of us here until we chat again, good night.
With Green Farms on-the-go chicken bites, 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected Tesco's nationwide.